Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.
Hello and welcome to Wireless, a series all about radio broadcast on the first Monday of every month on Flirt FM 101.3 in Galway and on flirtfm.ie. I'm John Walsh and I'll be with you for the next hour. Wireless covers all aspects of radio, analogue and digital, community, regional and national broadcasters, pirate and alternative radio, podcasting, radio ownership and radio's history and future prospects. Coming up on this edition of Wireless. We talked to Flirt FM's manager Paula Healy about her involvement in the station over the last 10 years and her plans for its future development. Simon Marr tells us about the plans for alternative music station 8radio.com, which is currently broadcasting on a multi-city FM licence, and we meet some of the members of the Radio Society here at NUI Galway.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
But first to Radio Retro, which each month delves into the archives to unearth a gem from radio history. Over the last few months, we've featured some of the pirate radio stations of the 1980s. Along with the commercial giants, some stations blazed a trail for the development of community radio in Ireland, which wouldn't actually be licensed as a sector until the mid-1990s. One such station was BLB, Bray Local Broadcasting, based in North Wicklow, which was a founding member of the National Association of Community Broadcasters. The following excerpt is probably from 1987, we're not entirely sure of the date, and is a promotion for community radio broadcast originally on BLB.
Is convinced that there is a need for local radio, that community radio can be of a great service to the local people.
We've been pressing for many years for improvement and enhancement at every level in radio.
Different people have different views as to the form local radio should take.
A lot of people in this area are now aware of what community radio means.
In the end, in my view, it's the listeners who will dictate what form local radio takes, not the legislators, but the listeners.
I believe that nobody has the right to say we are the only people who can decide who can broadcast.
Competition will do RT good, and it will also do the provincial press good.
Sure, yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Shout to the top for community radio.
Shout to the top for community radio, a promo broadcast on community station BLB in North Wicklow. One of the voices in there was the late Jim Mitchell, Minister for Communications in the coalition of 1982 to 1987, a government infamous for its inability to reach agreement on legalising local radio. Thanks to Brian Green in Dublin for that recording. And if you'd like to send us an archive recording for Radio Retro, feel free to get in touch through social media or on our blog wirelessflirt.wordpress.com.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
Last month we heard from Martina O'Brien of CRAIL, the Community Radio Forum of Ireland, which represents the country's 21 community radio stations. Although many third-level institutions have radio stations from time to time or operate online stations, there are only three full-time campus radio stations on FM in the country: ourselves at Flirt FM, Wired FM in Limerick, and UCC 98.3 FM in Cork. Flirt FM began broadcasting in September 1995 from NUI Galway, or University College Galway as it was then. There are over 150 volunteers and two paid staff, and the station describes itself as Galway's student, community and alternative station. Paula Healy is station manager here at Flirt FM. She came into studio and I asked her first to explain how she got involved in radio.
If I go back to before I started in Radio Sock and NUI Galway, sorry, UCG back then, showing my age, I was a bit of a radio nerd and a music nerd because it runs in my family. We all love music so much. So I used to listen to radio to tape songs off it and to geek out over what I could hear. So sometimes that meant that during the summer when the transmission was easier to pick up, you could get BBC and I'd be listening to it at night, just listening to a song as soon as the song I didn't like came on, skip on to the next thing. And then Radio Ireland came along and so did Donal Dineen, and that was just like the thing that really spurred me into thinking I could do this, I love this, or like I really enjoyed it so much don't get me wrong, when I was growing up, I was watching Christian Slater in like Pump Up the Volume as a pirate DJ and Chris the DJ from Northern Exposure. And I was just thinking, these people are the coolest. And then eventually when I came to college, turned out there was a radio society. Me out in Mount Bellevue, I don't think I'd twigged that there was a radio station because it doesn't quite get out that far. And I hadn't been in Galway really enough to know. But I was just delighted. I was like, are you kidding me? I could actually have my own radio show. I was like, pow. Just mind blown. So that's where it all started.
And so how did that develop then? You came in and you asked for a slot?
Yeah, so I got trained in and I got partnered up with various different people, a guy called Ben from California, then John and John from Claremorris, and then I think I might have had like a couple of shows on my own after that. But the big thing about it was, unlike most of the other volunteers, and this is the only reason I've kind of stuck around for so long, I was willing to do the boring stuff that nobody else wanted to do. I was willing to put up the posters, sweep the station, maybe vac it occasionally. Like, you know, I'd go and get the post. I was like such a little swat, you know, it was a bit of a lick. And there I was, like, you know, typing up Excel spreadsheets where everybody else is like, this is too boring for me. But I just wanted to learn how it worked. So that's kind of the reason I got involved in it. Now, I went off to Edinburgh for 5 or 6 years. And when I came back, there was a position for assistant manager. And the guy who was in the position, Ross Cunningham, he's a fluent Irish. He liked all this wonderful experience. But what he didn't have was the music knowledge and the sheer geekery of knowing their way around a computer roughly. So I was kind of in to do the tech-ish and to do all the computer stuff and to do all the music playlists. So that's kind of where I came in. So, yeah.
And what period was that? What year was that roughly when you came in as assistant manager?
2005 to 2006, and that was a part-time evening job. So I was there usually from 5 o'clock in the evening to 10 o'clock at night, making sure that nobody burned the place down or did anything, you know, terribly defamatory. So yeah, that was my job. So there's some shows I loved more than others. There's some where it was just you'd have to listen to everything to make sure it was all going out okay, because it was less automated back then. And there's some shows where you're kind of going, I'm just going to turn it down a tiny bit because this is really, like, you know, really noisy or something. But yeah, no, it was good, and I got to know everybody at night time as well, and fostered a bit more of a community having a body in there at night.
And when did you take over then as manager of Flirt?
I was acting station manager for a year and a half until they interviewed for the jobs. So I think I officially got in 2007, but I'd been doing it for most of 2006. And in my time as acting station manager, sure, we got the new license. I wrote half the thing. I still had like Peter Tiernan and Andrew O'Boyle, the guy who founded the station. They came along, and Ross Cunningham as well, also all helped me with the license application. But pulling it together, baptism of fire. And I got through that. And I think, like, once you've written a license application for a station, that's most of the job that a manager will ever have to do. So after that, I was delighted to come in full-time role.
And what was your philosophy been then as station manager? You're in the role now 10 years or more than 10 years unofficially. So what have you tried to achieve?
Well, the biggest things is I've looked internationally to find out what best practice is. So there have been some stations over the years where I thought were excellent examples of what you could do with student radio. And I haven't, like, wholesale stolen ideas from them, but I've just kind of used it to inspire me as to what we can go to next. My idea is, like, never been stopping trying to improve. Just because we're amateur radio hosts doesn't mean we have to sound amateur or be amateur. We can aspire to professionalism. Huge thing as well is just providing an alternative, because I think it's hugely important. Even though when I started out, I didn't really understand community radio as well as I do now. I just think it's so important to actually just have an alternative to whatever's playing Top 40 or Classic Hits. Now, there's space, like, in small amounts for that on the station, but by and large, that's what I love most about it. It's a place for all the weirdos to hang out and play music that you just don't get to hear anywhere else. Because the truth is, like, you can go to Spotify and you can listen to anything you want at any point, but one of the strong points of the station is the curated element of somebody who spent their life obsessed with music, trying to bring you new music as well, that an algorithm will hopefully never replace, hasn't yet anyway. So,
and you don't have that personality, that person there pushing the buttons, literally.
Yeah, another huge thing about that is the talk content has to be relevant to the audience, and it has to be something that you will never get anywhere else. It has to be unique to the campus of Galway and Galway City Centre and what's going on. Because if we're just talking about world affairs and celebrity gossip, There's no place for us. There's no uniqueness to what we're doing. So that's something that I do push quite a lot. Some people, much to their chagrin, because they do want to talk about the X Factor and I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here. But, you know, everybody else is. So you can talk about it a bit, but you still have to remember that first and foremost, you're answerable to the students in NUI Galway and all of the other campuses around Galway. and you have to cover what they're into and what they're doing and what they're up to. And that doesn't mean like the stuff they're watching on telly. It means the events that they're running and the productions they're putting on and the bands that they're setting up, and just also letting them have their own shows and stuff like that. So that's a very long-winded answer to a short question, but that's the ethos behind it.
Yeah, and to what extent is Flirt FM more than just a campus radio station? Because some of the promos on air, some of the jingles talk about Galway's alternative music station. Have you tried to broaden its appeal to just beyond students alone?
I think it was incidental back when we were writing the new licence application, because we didn't actually know that iRadio was going to open down the road in Galway as it started off. But I think had we realised that, we would have gone down the same route. And because basically some people say, why don't you just play Top 40 all the time and make it like, you know, as populist as possible? But I just thought then we'd be like a terrible carbon copy of a regional or a local commercial station without the resources to put it into it. So I said, like, actually that was part of it. Being alternative was just so that we actually had an identity and we had a music policy and we had ideas behind it, instead of just going out and saying, sure, whatever it is, you know. It's actually much, much easier to figure out your identity and what you should sound like if you've already had a bit of a thought and said, OK, maybe we should go down this. And actually, I think even our licence, the last one said, we will be an alternative to locally available commercial radio. And that was the biggest thing. So, like, you know, if they're doing that down the road, why should we just copy and replicate it? We should try and do something different. You know, so we do insofar as we can. So if that means that, yes, people who like alternative music and like to hear something a bit different that isn't playlisted. Now, don't get me wrong, there's some bands that sometimes get an awful lot of play in the station and you might be sick of them because the people on the show an hour later don't realise they're played an hour before. So I apologise. But by and large, it's just probably a bit of a breath of fresh air for people who are looking for something different on the airwaves as well.
And what have the highlights been then of your time in the last 10 years at Flirt FM?
I think when we got the new licence, obviously in 2006, because I was so nervous about that. It actually got renewed in June 2007. So that's why the new one's getting renewed for June 2017. But the relief of me going in there completely green, wondering, could I do it? I'm like, there was tears. I'm like, there was sleepless nights. There was headaches. But I got it written. And then when the Broadcasting Authority or the BCI came back and they said, not only did we get it, we didn't have to go to Dublin for an oral hearing to explain the licence application, I was delighted. Having people like Michael D come in and open the new building, I'm like, this new facility here. I think the only reason we have a new facility is because I stuck around for long enough to not let anybody forget. Because, you know, institutional memory, you need to have somebody here to remember that somebody said you could move into the new building. Because if previously most of the station managers had left after 18 months, because I'll tell you, it community radio does not pay well, and it's long hours, and it's an absolute slog, but I love it. So it was just by sheer stupid, grim determination that I stuck around long enough to actually see us move into this building, and couldn't be prouder of it.
And a good example was that International Campus Radio Day that we had last year.
That was great
when
fun.
When you did your live broadcast, was it 4 a.m. or 5 a.m.?
4 a.m., 5 a.m. It was 5 a.m. and I'm such a dork. I didn't record it, because normally everything we have going out overnight is actually pre-recorded, so we didn't need to take a recording, and I don't have a recording of it. I'm kicking myself. I'm so annoyed.
You'll have to do it again.
Yeah, I will have to do it again. It was a great show. We decided, instead of just going on and talking, Joanne, who does Schrodinger's Chat, the science show, she did Irish scientists, famous Irish scientists, which was great. I played all Irish music and talked to a load of the other community or college radio stations, and I just thought, it's a good show. We'll recreate it sometime.
And this was relayed, wasn't it, in other stations around the world?
Yeah, so there's 24 time. Different stations. So there's people from Colombia, Canada. I don't know if there's anybody. There's Italy. I think that I don't know where the furthest flung one was. There's nobody. I think there was somebody in Hong Kong. So it got quite exotic. So you can imagine, it was just nice to be part of that and be the Irish reps.
And do you plan to stay around for the foreseeable future? And what are the plans for the station's development?
I'll stay around for. I basically, if anybody asks, they're like, "Why are you still here?" Because, like, you know, the job doesn't pay that much, and you know, it's like you could be off working for somewhere like, you know, massive. It's like as if I'm going to get paid the same as Miriam. That's not going to happen. But I'm doing a little bit of extra work with NUI Galway Youth Academy and with the MA in Journalism, and extra challenges like that really keep me going. But part of how long I plan to stay here is, as soon as I run out of ideas for how I want to develop the station, I think it is time for me to move on. As soon as I stop generating new ways of getting in contact with people and new show ideas, I think that, like, that's the point we have to say, do you have anything more to give it? So at the moment, I've been here a while, but it does mean that I understand it very, very well. And all of the understanding of how stuff works just comes naturally. But there's stuff like I want to get podcasts back up and running. As we had them before, but we didn't. Podcasts weren't huge, so we were trying to, we're a bit dithering over which content to podcast mm-hmm. and which to not, because we are still an FM broadcast station. I'm very interested in the idea of having a second stream on the internet that would just be the music shows that we do and just Irish music.
Okay.
So I think there's definitely a place for that, because the people that play new Irish music on the station, they really love it and they know what they're talking about. So I think, particularly with all the discussion around radio playing Irish music, it's a good time for it. And I'd like to do some more accredited training over the next while to maybe deliver some QQI courses to people. I've never had time to do it personally, but I'd like to see that in future would be maybe running like a summer camp for TY students, or doing like a FITAC level 4 or 5 for, you know, the general public. That's something I'd like to see coming up as well.
To spread the word about the notion of community radio.
Community radio, us, but also just to upskill people as well. There's a huge degree of citizen journalism and media literacy to be brought into that, which I think it's so important. Once people realise that you're not in an ivory tower, because everybody at some point walks in off the street, comes into Flirt FM, has a chat with me, signs up and gets trained in. I mean, you know, who do you think is making all your shows that are on right now? They're all volunteers. They're all ye, basically. They're all the public. So I think that idea is something that we need to really get out there.
And you mentioned earlier about looking at international best practice and other stations that had influenced you. Can you give me an example of something that you thought was particularly good?
I'm such a nerd because I love Radio Campus Paris. I think that they're excellent. I thought that their branding was really, really good. I liked the kind of music they played. I really liked their website. I liked their emphasis on French music, but new French music. And even when I was over in Paris, I went to meet them and I was so mortified because I forgot every word of French I had ever learned in all of my Leaving Cert, and they forgot all the English that they'd learned in university. So we stood there kind of going a bit. But it was interesting to see that those guys, now Paris being like, you know, so much bigger than Galway, and like they're French, so they're cool. They're automatically cooler than I feel. But they were operating out of the same size of facility, with roughly the same number of volunteers, now a bigger pool to choose from and everything. But it kind of made me think, OK, well, they're doing something that we can aspire to with the same, not the same resources or the same resource pool, but, you know, it kind of felt like, you know, they're able to do that, so why not go for it? And even listening to, like, I'll still listen to, like, BBC Radio 1 and all of the, a lot of the American college stations and, you know, like public radio stations as well. The UK ones and... you know, I will dip into other Irish student radio stations as well and see if they're doing anything that we're like, oh, we should be doing that as well, you know.
See what the competition is like.
Yeah.
And you've mentioned other stations in Ireland then, so maybe now we can talk a little bit more about the Irish radio landscape. And I suppose to introduce the importance of the community radio sector, I mean, it's 21 years on the go now since it was first licensed in the mid-90s. What is your view on the state of the health of the community radio sector in Ireland and its role in society?
Well, this has got so many layers that I could go into. Full disclosure, I was secretary of CRAIL and I was PRO for a while, and I've done various bits and pieces with them. And the thing that I get from community radio starting off is, if you ever have instances like when Jim Carroll's writing a piece in the Irish Times and he mentions the state and the commercial broadcasters but not community and leaves it out, part of me goes, ah, CRAIL isn't doing its job, we haven't done our job, not enough people know about us. And then the other part of me kind of goes, listen, every single station manager is working far, far more hours than they're getting paid for. They don't sleep much. They wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm speaking for myself, but you know, it's pretty much across the board, worrying about how to fix stuff. We're just like scrambling to keep going, let alone blowing our own horns and just going out, you know, to tell people about ourselves. So the towns that have a community radio station will know about them, but I think more work needs to be done to emphasise the differences between commercial and community. Because a lot of TDs in the past have actually confused, like they've said, they've been at a CRAIL thing and they might have said like, oh, you know, oh, here's this local community radio station. You're like, it's local commercial. There's a job to be done there. And
whose job is that, do you think?
It's tough to say, because we've gone up to the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Communications, and we've outlined the idea of us as public service broadcasters. I mean, it's up to CRAIL But who is CREAL? CREAL is not a person. It's not an organisation. It's an umbrella organisation for all the stations that are like those people that are so desperately just trying to keep their own stations going. It's very, very tough because like we're stretched so thin just trying to keep our stations going, looking at it on like a national level and trying to like get really excited about like pouring extra time into that as well is really, really tough. So it's down to the volunteers that are working in the stations to let everybody know about the stations that exist. It's down to station management to remind people that people are community radio stations, that they adhere to these principles about, you know, how much money can be commercially derived, that we adhere to the AMARC charters of community radio, those principles that are very important. It's all these different things. I felt it was kind of sad that, you know, Pat from Liffey Sound had to write into the Irish Times to go, listen, lads, there's another sector that you're not talking about. I just kind of went, well done him for actually bringing it up. Mm-hmm. But isn't it sad that the people that were writing about community, like writing about radio, didn't actually have a full picture and hadn't actually dug any deeper than just picking stations out of their head? I just felt it was a bit disappointing, really. So it's 50-50. I think, you know, there's an onus on people who are reporting on radio to make sure they report on all radio and not just exclude what isn't in the JNLRs. And there's an onus on community radio stations to keep pushing for recognition.
And how do you increase resources then? And how do you do that without undermining the voluntary nature of which is the backbone, really, of the community radio sector and indeed the community sector in general? Yeah. How do you adequately create that framework which can then be sustained by voluntary activity?
There's a couple of different things there where we would absolutely, of course, if there's a new license fee or like a public service broadcasting charge, we are public service broadcasters. That's what we do. And I know everybody and their dog is trying to like put their hand in the pot for that. But it just seems crazy that that's what we do. And we're doing it on so little money. The entirety of Flirt FM runs on less than your average high-end person would get in a you know, a state broadcaster or like a high-up person in a commercial broadcaster. We run on so little, really, if you think about it, that having the certainty that you are going to have enough money to pay your bills and be able to keep one full-time member of staff in there, like some community radio stations are probably still just a part-timer, maybe somebody on CE, that's it, keeping a concern like that going. That's the kind of thing, because when you're just making sure that every show goes on the hour, every hour, it's very, very difficult. And if equipment breaks down or, you know, something just doesn't work or somebody doesn't turn up for a show, you know, then it's very difficult to say we should be standing at the, you know, shouting from the rooftops that this place exists. So I think core funding would be huge.
And are there better models of funding of community radio in other countries that you're aware of?
There are. I'm not going to be able to remember them off the top of my head, but I have been to enough of the European meetings with on Leonardo and Grundvig that there are models where there's like not a huge amount, but enough to keep the wolves from the door and be able to guarantee. Like in Europe, definitely there's two or three. I would pick out the countries that I think that I know they are, but somebody will like tweet in or text in saying, it's not Austria, it's Sweden, or it's not Sweden, it turns out it's Norway, you know, or something.
But there are other models.
There are other models.
With more sustainable core funding, as you say, which then can be supported by voluntary effort.
And I know a lot of people look at the Sound and Vision scheme and say, but aren't community radio stations getting loads out of that? But you might put in 7 applications and get rejected on all of them. Mm-hmm. You can't say to somebody, well, you know, come on and work for the station, we definitely have funding for you. And it's very difficult as well because everybody's looking for your 3-year business plan. They don't want to know what's going to happen the next 9 months. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to say, well, we hope to make Sound and Vision funding for the, you know, for the studio rental, it's very, very difficult because like banks will kind of go, yeah, good luck. That's not enough information for us. And it's really tough having to say to people like, well, we want you to work here, but we just don't know. We don't know what the future is going to bring. And like there's the sad part of that as well is that, you know, a couple of radio stations have gone by the wayside through be it like planning, governance, just stuff going wrong and not having enough time to react to it, or actually just running out of money. So it just does show you that like we can't go on nothing forever.
Isn't it a rather small number of community stations that we have? If you consider that the, you know, we're in 20 years at least, or 21 or 22 years for some stations, that we still only have about 20 stations, really.
So there's
at this stage
21. We've lost a couple over the last while, but there's like 5 or 6 actually up and coming, and there's a couple even recently, like Tremor, that got their full license. So I mean, there's an ebb and flow. It takes an idiot like me behind the scenes to want to put that amount of time into it, and it takes a team of people that will turn up every single week to do it. And sometimes it's just not sustainable in the long term because nobody in community radio is lining their pockets out of it and nobody's staying just for the good of their health because it's detrimental, if anything. So you can imagine how in some places just after doing it for 10 or 20 years, it just gets to be too much. So I can really understand how that can happen and if stuff can go wrong. But I think it's tough as well because as soon as you go FM, there's a lot of restrictions on it. And it's good that there's some of these restrictions on it because, the Broadcasting Act and everything they've come up with and all the guidelines, it is for the good of the content on the stations and making sure that they are community and it makes sense. But all of those things are all restrictions and hoops to jump through that may just make the people that are just more interested in doing it and would like to give it a go, there's more at stake than that when you're just trying to get a licence on the road. And there's you have to run a temporary licence or you have to run like your 1 year, 100 day, 365 day licence as a pilot. And, you know, some people do fall at that hurdle. You'd nearly think that there should be a community radio station in every town in Ireland.
Yes.
But I guess, like, if you're looking at a small pot of funding, like, where do you get your fundraising from? Is there a commercial in the town that'll kind of just have all of the advertising kind of gone? How many church gate collections can you do if you're out in the country? You know, that kind of thing. It's all of this stuff has to be borne in mind. I'm like, it's not free to do. So, yeah.
And you mentioned the AMARC charter earlier, and just for the information of listeners, that's about the principles behind community radio. And to what extent do you think Irish community radio reflects those principles of democratisation and empowerment and participation and so on?
Well, as part of the start out, when you want to join CRAIL, and CRAIL, again, the Community Radio Forum of Ireland, part of that is like you kind of join that as just like a getting on the ladder and registering your interest and having a bit of support. But even before you start, CRAIL kind of says when you sign up to be a member, do you subscribe to the AMARC Charter? When it comes to the AMARC Charter, it reads a bit like the radio equivalent of the UN Charter for Human Rights, which is like sounding very lofty, but it's like basically making sure that you don't discriminate based on gender, sex, religion, etc., etc., and that you're not for profit and that you're owned and you're part of the community and that they're allowed to make decisions. All those kind of things you can read. I think it's 10 points or 11 points. We actually have it framed in the editing suite. I'm sure nobody really looks at it because nobody looks at posters, but it's there for anybody who wants to read it. And it's something that the Broadcasting Authority as well in their community radio guidelines ask people to subscribe to and say that it's part of it. So you should subscribe to it. So it's part of something that they have to, really kind of sign up to.
And what does it mean to you, do you think, and for Flirt FM? What do the principles of this charter mean on a daily basis?
On a daily basis, do you know what it keeps? It kind of brings me in for a land every now and again. It kind of goes, who are you doing this for? It's the students. That's your community. That's your community of interest. Anytime I'm like, sure, I'll go off and do this or I'll go off and do that. And I was kind of going, at the end of the day, does this actually benefit students? Will they get something out of it? Will they enjoy listening to it? Will they be able to be a part of it? Will it educate them? Will it give them information? Will it maybe get them a career after they leave university? And if the answer is yes, it's generally for the good of everything, I'll kind of go, OK, go ahead with it. And you have to keep reminding yourself to be accountable to and beholden to. So to be honest, if anybody comes in and, even yourself doing this interview, I have like maybe three or four students doing a thesis on something coming in and asking me some of the same questions. And I'm just like, listen, I'm here for you. I'm paid by NUI Galway students. So if you come in and you want to record a thesis interview or your band wants to record a demo, that's like this is all part of the being answerable to. When it comes to community radio in general, huge thing on plurality of ownership and diversity and participation. So as everybody knows in the country, there's some people that own an awful lot of the radio stations. And I think sometimes people forget that how powerful it is to have community radio, where all of these 21 community radio stations, they're not owned by a company. They're not owned by one person. I'm here all the time, but I'm answerable to my board of directors. My board of directors are made up of NUI Galway staff and NUI Galway students and the SU president. And the SU president's been democratically elected and everybody else is just basically there to go, whoa, Paula, if I ever get too fanciful or try to hit off in the wrong direction, which thankfully they haven't pulled me up on, so they must think I'm doing okay. But that's what I have. I have those systems of checks and the Broadcasting Authority will check in on us. So it's huge. Just having all of these different micro community organisations that are by of and for the community. I'm like, that's got to be powerful, I think. And it's something that's international as well. So it's not just us. They're doing it everywhere else in the world. So it must be right.
And just finally then, Paula, the challenges facing the future of radio in general, you're dealing with a very fickle community of interest, really, in terms of technology and moving along to the next technological fad. And how do you think radio will survive in this technological shakeout that's taking place at the moment with the Norway switching off FM, as we had in last month's programme, and the migration to digital and so on? What's the role for radio in general in that landscape?
I think it's a huge thing about reliability of source. I was even at the National Media Conference, the first one that Trinity ran a couple of years ago, and they said anybody can go on Twitter and tweet, but as even recently post-truth, fake news, what the radio stations are hopefully doing over the last couple of decades is they're building up a level of trust, accountability, a voice that people can actually rely on, and something, a voice that's reacting to what people want, and, you know, like, without dumbing down or anything, but just saying, like, we know what people have been interested in the past. So that's a huge thing, outside of whatever broadcasting we do, that all the stations have that. Then as far as FM goes, I mean, it's disappointing. I think my biggest thing that I'm annoyed about is that smartphones are occasionally, they're shipping without FM chips enabled, and I am so annoyed about that. And I would be annoyed about that even if I wasn't involved in radio, because it's just, if you're paying €600 for a smartphone, and the cynicism that's involved in saying, do you know what, you can just stream it and you can just use your data plan to do that, when in fact you should not be charged, or you should not have any limitations put on the FM radio that you can access, because it's the last thing that's truly free. Mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, you can get your free copy of Spotify, or you can like watch stuff on YouTube, but you're still consuming and you're still having to pay for Wi-Fi to do that, and you're still eating up a huge amount of battery as well. I just think it's like, it's one resource that should remain free, and should remain free on like all of the different devices you can, because as we've seen, any time that the internet goes down, like as did before Christmas, where do you go in the end? Or if there's an emergency, FM is never going to diminish because 5,000 people are listening to it. It's just, it's a sound wave, as opposed to if you've got 5,000 people in a web stream, it's going to sound like muck. You know, it's not just not going to work, or it's the site's going to crash. So something that's something that kind of annoyed me. So I don't know how we're going to deal with that, but I think it's important for stations to keep the FM going, look at podcasts if they think it's suitable, proliferate in that, make sure that their web stream is good, the information they put out there is decent, that they let people know what's happening and let people know when they're on air so they can tune in to listen, make it available to restream on Mixcloud or just on the site or something, because appointment to listen to radio has probably gone a little bit out the window, no more than TV, everybody's just listening to it again. So that's a huge thing, and just making sure that because it's not just about the product, it's also about the process and the people involved. And that will always be important, I think. So it's about the people that we have in here that we train in, and we get them up to speed. And then you just see them blossom while they're in here, from somebody who's quite shy into somebody who doesn't mind standing up in front of a room of people and giving their opinion. That's still always going to be important. It may be in the end that we'll have like an FM arm, and then we'll have a podcasting arm. Who knows what happens? But yeah, it is kind of disappointing for Norway as well, because you say it's just... streaming just isn't an option yet, and the DAB digital radios are prohibitively expensive. Like, you certainly won't get one for €150 in Euro 2 if you're stuck. And also, yeah, it's just like the resources it hogs. So that's going to be tough. And
I think it's fundamentally an access issue, I think, really, the question of DAB or digital versus FM. It really is access, and based on income, and as you say, you can get a cheap FM or AM radio for so little.
I'm so annoyed on behalf of pretty much everybody. I'm just annoyed that the way it's going is curbing free access to media. And I disagree. I'm like, okay, the newspapers, they can go behind a paywall because they need to make money somehow. But FM radio and like radio should always be free to access. There should be no bar to it. It should be democratic. It should be accessible. And putting any barriers towards that, monetary or pragmatic or equipment wise, that is just fundamentally wrong as far as I'm concerned.
I couldn't agree more. Radio has to be free and accessible to all. Paula Healy, manager of Flirt FM, speaking to me about her involvement in the station to date and her plans for its development in the future.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
The alternative music station 8radio.com went on air in February for a total of 8 weekends on FM in February and March. 8 Radio broadcasts online normally, but is now also available on FM on a temporary multi-city licence every Saturday and Sunday in Dublin, Cork, Limerick and Galway. Last year, I interviewed the director of 8 Radio, Simon Marr, about his involvement in alternative music radio in Dublin over the past two decades. We didn't have time then to broadcast the full interview, so this month we hear more from Simon about the reasons behind 8 Radio and why Ireland still needs an alternative music radio station.
The way that we figured when we're putting 8 Radio together was that, of course, Phantom TXFM was still very much there. So it's not like, okay, well, I'm just going to put on a better version of what that is. There would have been, you know, little or no point to that. So when we were thinking about it, it was really thinking back to the days of Coast FM. You know, and going, okay, well, what was the thing that made Coast FM work? And it was that idea that what we did was people would come in and they'd play their favourite songs. And that was the thing about it, like, you know, and people would gush about how much they loved this new song from whoever this band was. And the other side of it was, I was teaching at that stage in Ballyfermot College, and I was asking my students, I said, well, what do you listen to, you know? And they'd say, oh, we listen to our iPads, or, you know, our iPads, or iPods.
As they were then.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. You know, or you know, the early streaming services. And so say, and what do you listen to? And they'd say, well, a lot of the time it's just random, you know, but it's random. It's like, oh, yeah, I love that. You know, I love that song. But they may be two totally different tracks. So I said, okay, well, what if you try and find a whole pile of really good songs in our belief, you know, put them together and play them. You know, and I suppose it would be, whatever you want to call it, it's a awfully fruity term of being like a multi-format alternative music station, like, you know. But you're as likely to hear, you know, Arcade Fire, you'll hear David Bowie following it, but you might well hear Duran Duran after that, you know. Then you might hear something, you know, really, really cutting-edge indie, you know. But this cutting-edge indie then could be followed by, you know, something almost disco-y from the 70s, like, you know, if it's a good enough song.
So that's how, that's 8 Radio.
That's 8 Radio, essentially, yeah. Yes. But it's all the time trying to focus on, look, is the song good enough? You know, is this song good enough? And if it's good enough, then there are a cohort of people who will listen to this. You know, and the whole idea when we set up 8 Radio, you know, when we went and we tried to explain it to people, we said, look, a lot of people will tune into 8 Radio. They'll hear one song they like, they'll hear the next song they don't like, and they'll go, no, that's terrible, I'm turning it off. You know, and one of the problems we had with Phantom is that we kept trying to follow them with it. You know, whereas with 8 Radio, the idea is, okay, some people will like it. Probably less people will like it than will like something more mainstream. You know, the people who like it will appreciate it for what it is. And for the others, it's okay. You don't like it, you want to go to another station, thank you very much for your ears. Feel free to come back anytime. It's not elitist, it's not snobbish, it just is what it is. It's just 8. You know, and we found that people started to pick up on that because they were being treated with a degree of respect that perhaps they weren't necessarily getting from radio elsewhere.
And was this the lack of formatting and the lack of blandness that maybe you might associate with some other radio stations?
Well, see, this is, like, we had it, like, the format for 8 Radio is relatively tight. You know, as we have a certain amount, you know, the hour is broken up like a traditional old radio station hour with, you know, a clock with your songs from various time periods and genres and styles in it. But it's the mixture of genres and styles. And it's that idea of being willing to say, okay, not everybody is going to like this, and that's okay. You know, if we're just playing a song on the basis that, you know, we think this song is very good, then that's fine.
Okay, so we're here in the studios of 8 Radio today in Campden Row, I think.
Yes.
And so tell us about the on-air experience then for people who haven't heard it. It's only available online. Is it available on DAB as well in Dublin?
No, it's available online, and we also then do 15 weekends of FM a year, and we've done those. We expanded out those 15 weekends last year into added a fourth city. First year we did Dublin, Cork, Limerick, and then last year we expanded out. We did Dublin, Cork, Limerick, Galway. So we expanded it out to try and see, just to once again, because you're working on the basis that, look, this is a niche product, is that it's unashamedly niche, is that how do we get the most people? And so we've got to trawl different areas, you know, and see the sort of people we get. We were amazed, and it's one of the, and not just because of the, obviously, the audience of this programme, but we were amazed at the response that we got from Galway.
8radio.com, playing the music we like.
In terms of the viability is the biggest question for it. Is that we have to make the decision. What we did with Phantom was we moved Phantom to fit a model. to fit a business model. Whereas really what has to happen this time around is the business model has to fit the format. So let's just say that we do get, you know, there's 8 Radio as an alternative music service. It's going to pick up 1.5% audience share, whatever it is. You've got to look at that and kind of go, okay, well, 1.5% audience share is probably going to equate to 300,000-400,000 quid a year that you might bring in revenue, maybe 500,000, you know, if things improve. And then you're going to go, okay, well, the station has to cost €1 less than that to run. You know, so that's where it has to work. So a lot of that will be for the regulator to decide, you know, and the BAI to decide, okay, do we really want a service that does this thing? And if we really want a service that does this thing, then we have to say, okay, well, pitch your model. You know, because where we'll inevitably run into difficulty would be, you know, the TXNM license gets re-advertised. Somebody puts in a bid, let's say that's they're talking about investing 2 million quid. We put in a bid saying we're going to invest 500,000. You know, how on earth do you square that particular circle? You know, and that's for the regulator to work out, and it's for the regulator to decide what it is that they want. You know, but we have been very clear to them that we'll be very interested, obviously, in licensing 8 Radio on a permanent basis, but that the model has got to fit. You know, this isn't going to be another, you know, 19FM or Galway Bay or any of those things. It's just not going to work that way. It has to be something that, okay, well, this is a thing that we can provide, and if we decide not to, and this is what we've said all along, is that when TXFM closes at the end of October, is that their audience aren't going to suddenly go to FM 104 or Spin. You know, their audience are gone to Spotify or Deezer, you know, or iTunes or whatever it is. That's where they're gone. And the idea of a station like 8 Radio would be to try and keep them in radio, as in listening to radio in the first place, and which is step one. And if you can have them listening to radio that's, you know, home-produced, that's Irish-produced radio, then better still. And if we can do it, that it then also provides exposure for both broadcasters and musical talent from Ireland, well, then that's great too. But there are compromises that have to be made along the way.
And obviously the question of format arises, and you're online only at the moment and on the TuneIn app. So obviously FM is still, you know, thankfully we still need some analogue
services. Oh, absolutely we do. Yes, yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. And I think it's the accessibility of analogue is still there and will remain there for the foreseeable. But if it gets to a point where the platform is available but the service isn't, then, you know, we're wasting our time. You know, people will just look at us and kind of go, FM, wasn't that quaint?
8radio.com, playing the music we like.
I suppose radio in different ways will survive in different ways, or not, as the case may be. You know, you'll always have, I suppose, the what would you call it there? I suppose the market over 50 who will want your RT Radio 1, will want your News Talk, you know, all of those things. The trick for Radio 1 and News Talk, and like, obviously, is to bring that audience back. And in fairness to them, they probably have quite well. There would be a lot more people who are listening to radio now, who are younger, who are listening to talk radio rather than music radio. So you can, to sum that up, you can probably separate music radio and talk radio pretty well. So if you get into the land then of music radio, I think music radio is where the real threat exists. You know, you've got, I looked at the figures in the last Jane Lawrence, and the 15 to 24 is listening to any radio at all in, for instance, in the Dublin market. You know, it's come down quite, it's now almost to the point where a third of 15 to 24 year olds just don't listen to radio
at all.
It's just not part of their thing. They wouldn't have the apparatus, you know, necessary. They might hear it in the car, it might be on in a shop or whatever it is. But if you ask them, are you listening to as much music as you were? They're listening to at least as much, if not more music than they ever were. You know, and that's where I suppose the battleground is between, okay, what do we do that makes radio something that it's a must-have thing, rather than just saying, okay, well, look, I can do a playlist on Spotify. Like, you could do 8 Radio on Spotify, you know, easily enough. Put 1,000 songs together, whatever it is. You've got your diverse playlist. The reason that people listen to 8 Radio is they listen, one, because they're going to hear stuff that they don't know and they think is going to be good, and two, that it's presented by people, you know, who want to talk to them and who they feel they can identify with and that they have a respect for. And not just that the listener has respect for the presenter, but they feel that the presenter has respect for the listener as well.
So that's what radio needs to be successful.
Oh, absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. Like, you know, it can't be about the top 40 songs anymore, because the top 40 songs are, you know, a weekly playlist on Spotify. You know, it's got to be about the other bits, you know, whatever those other bits are. And that doesn't necessarily have to be, it doesn't have to be something earth-shattering. Like, when it comes to even training new people here at 8 Radio, I'm not telling them to, like, you've got to reinvent the wheel all the time. You know, it's just got to be, okay, look, go. If you like a song, express that. You know, if you want to talk about something musical, talk about it. If you don't like something, talk about that too. You know, because that's the sort of thing that will make people go, yeah, okay. You know, and we'll stay listening to it. And it's one of those things that, you know, I think people see it, and I've been to sort of radio conferences where it's all the, you know, how do we win the battle against Spotify and Deezer? The battle is over. You know, the battle is over. It's now, okay, we now have two complementary mediums, you know, is that, and even I do it, and I'm a fierce radio nerd, is that I spend a lot of time listening to radio, but by the same token, if I'm working at home, I will regularly put on one of my Spotify playlists. You know, so it's there. So it's a matter of, okay, how do we get people to spend maybe that little bit more time, or in the case of 15 to 24 year olds, any time listening to radio as distinct from, you know, listening to music via streaming services or, you know, via YouTube or wherever else it is that they're accessing their music. So it's there, but we need to, I suppose, grasp the reality of, you know, of what it is and going, okay, well, what do we have to do in order to keep people there?
Simon Marr of 8radio.com, which is on the air at the moment on a temporary weekend licence. You can listen in Galway on Saturday and Sunday on 87.7 FM, as well as the usual 8radio.com.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. Follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt.
And finally, the Radio Society is one of several clubs and societies here on the campus of NUI Galway and gives an opportunity for students to learn about radio and to become involved with Flirt FM if they like. I met some of the members of Radio SOC recently and asked them what radio meant to them and why they were involved. First we hear from the auditor, Felipe Lochran Ponce, who is Irish-Chilean, then from Nolwenn Dufou du Cerdaniel from Brittany, and finally from David Newswanger from Costa Rica.
Why am I involved in Radio SOC? I love sound. Sound was something that drew to me when I was studying physics first during secondary school. It was one of the best times that I could... It was one of the funnest things to understand, or even force myself to understand. It was great fun to manipulate. Also, I had great fun as a drummer. And so that all, again, came towards recording and sound. And then one day I realised I'm not really up to much, may as well go join my local radio station down in Blanchardstown. So that was Phoenix FM. And I worked with them for a while, did some recording with them, and did some, editing, and really fell in love with it, really fell for the joy. I did one little piece on weather and weather live, and it was great. So that's what drew me then.
And so were you a broadcaster on Phoenix FM then, or more behind the scenes editing sound, or a mixture of both?
So it wasn't even editing sound at the start of it. It was actually developing the live sound, so producing the live sound, and a little bit of editing on the side as well. So I started off at the back on the back scenes. Now, I'm just going to make it clear, I only spent a few days there, so a couple of weeks, and that was no fault of anything that was really going on. It just kind of happened that I fell out of it, and yeah. So when I got the opportunity to do it here, I fell for it. And the first thing that I fell for while I was here was editing sound for another show that I helped out on for a while, and yeah, just fell into it again.
And you have your own show on Flirt FM as well. What do you do on the station?
What I do on the station is a show called Skiophile. Skiophile is a show based around science, but it's also mostly based around interviews, because I realise that I don't have too much expertise to be able to talk about it just yet in too much detail. But I do know people who would be able to give it, and we're in the college here. We have such a massive resource of people who are doing their PhDs, lecturers as well, and different societies that are going through it, final years. Everybody who has a little piece of experience, I'm more than happy and willing to have on the show and to have a little bit of an interview with. And I'm looking for somebody at the moment to do a mathematics show with me, because that's something that is within STEM that isn't really looked into.
Okay, so you're a student here doing science, and you're trying to showcase science on your program then. That's the aim of it, is it?
Yes, that's right. So last year, I'm a first year now, so a mature student, and last year I was doing a PLC up in Cavan, and one of the lecturers there, one of the teachers there, was very aggravated by all of the scientific falses, untruths and lies. And
alternative facts.
Alternative facts, if you will, yeah. All the misinterpretations that different journalists would attempt to... give and try to sound sciencey and all that jazz, but it just doesn't work, and it misinforms the public. The public then don't really know how to get their facts straight. So that's why a show on science kind of really did draw me once I realised that there was a radio station here.
Right, and why do you like sound so much? What is it about it? Is it the science of sound, or the physical sensation, the emotional side, the cultural aspects? Why exactly are you so interested in sound itself?
On a personal aspect, sound can really change the way that you feel about any kind of situation. When you're walking, when I'm walking down the street and there's a change in music and I have it on random, sound, any of those sounds can alter my state of mind, can alter the way that I see the world around me. So that's a little bit of psychoanalysis or psychophysics. Then there's the actual physics behind it and how the waves actually compress and form together, and I think that's just amazing how waves actually do form, and then how you can manipulate them on a computer, and then how you can visualize them in different ways, and everything that I hate sounding a little bit silly when I'm talking about this, but everything that is to do with the circle really, really just gets me, because a circle is a sine wave, is simple harmonic motion, is a sound wave, is light, and so on and so forth. So all of those things about a circle really do get me going, and the fact that sound is also in that kind of circle kind of brings me to that point as well.
So what are the aims of Radio Sock then, finally?
The aims of Radio Sock are just to be able to get people interested in radio, or see, or even nurture any kind of interest that somebody already has in radio. People would come to us and be kind of like, oh, a little bit iffy. Should I be on radio? Is this something that I would like to do? Our facility is to be able to allow them to see whether that's what they enjoy doing, and that's what we have our shows on for, the Radio Sock, every 3 times at minimum per month. That's what we do those for, to give people a chance to see what they like doing on it.
We're also speaking to Nolwenn then from Radio Sock. Can I ask you, well, first of all, where you're from and what your interest in radio is?
So my family, as I said earlier, is from Brittany, and the past 7 years I lived in Paris. But this year I decided to start the program of conference interpreting at the NUI. And my interest in radio then, I have to say, it would be the first time I will start to do really something in a radio source, because it doesn't exist in France, just like because of that. But
what do you mean it doesn't exist in France? Are you talking about studio
universities I went to, and I went to 3 different universities in France, and none of them has a radio society.
Okay.
So it's quite new for me, and but I always had an interest for it, since it was something which was a very important part of my life since the very beginning. For example, when I was still living with my mother in a quite remote area in the countryside, we had to commute every day to go to school, because she was a teacher. So I was her pupil. Could you imagine how difficult it was for me? And when we had some tensions or everything like that, the radio was kind of a peacekeeper in the car, or it was a way to have fun, because we were listening to this radio stations just broadcasting all music, and we were like dancing and as we could in the car and singing like crazy. So it provides some fun too. And then I started to enter, you know, this dark age when you are looking to discover who you are, what your life will be, and then I started to listen to this kind of shows broadcasted quite late at night, with persons just calling the stations in order to ask questions to the radio host, and it helped me in a way. And after, I used it in order to learn things with podcasts and everything. So it was very, in a lot of different ways, it was quite important in my life. And so now I just decided to join the radio society, because it would be, in a way, a possibility for me to give back all that I received thanks to the radio, and also a way to work with my foreign languages.
So are you hoping to be broadcasting then on Flirt FM at some stage, or are you a volunteer already on the station?
I just started. I just, you know, had the induction day, and I didn't have the time to prepare a demo yet, but I will try to do it, you know, or to join an existing team, or just to have my own show, I don't know, depending on what is possible to do.
David, tell me a little bit about yourself and what has brought you to NUI Galway, because you're not from here.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Montevideo, Costa Rica, and I go to college in the United States at a college called Berea College in Kentucky. And my school has an exchange program with NUI Galway, so I'm here as part of that exchange.
Okay, very good. And what are you studying either at home or here in NUI Galway? Is there any link with radio?
I'm studying computer science, and there's sort of a link because a lot of the sort of networking and transmission systems that we use in computer science are based off of radio systems. And I've also had some experience working with websites for radio stations and stuff like that.
So tell me about your interest in radio, your experience in radio so far in Costa Rica.
So I helped found a community radio station in my hometown a couple of years ago, and I mostly worked on broadcast and sort of technical website stuff. But that's kind of where I was introduced to radio.
Why did you help set up a community radio station in the first place? What was your motivation?
It was an interesting problem to solve. Basically, I was approached by a couple of people who wanted me to help build a website, and they wanted the website to have sort of streaming capabilities, and I thought it would be kind of a fun problem to solve. So I took on the challenge and helped them out.
So did you have any interest in kind of radio itself, or was it more the kind of technical support that you came along with?
Yeah, initially I was mostly just interested in sort of the technical side of things, so the broadcast systems and websites and sound recording devices and all that. After my involvement in the radio, I started becoming more and more interested in podcasting. I have a bunch of different podcasts that I listen to on a regular basis, and so I became more interested in sort of the content creation side of radio as well as the technical side.
What kind of podcasts do you like?
I mostly listen to economics podcasts, so two of my favorites are Freakonomics Radio and Planet Money, and then I also have a bunch of other sort of mixed content podcasts like Hello Internet and Cortex and a couple of others, Radiolab.
What is it about podcasts that you like so much? Is it the format? Is there something to do with the style, or is there another reason that you like them?
A lot of them have a lot of really interesting content to listen to. I feel like I've learned a ton about economics just from listening to Planet Money. And it's something that's great because I can download it on my phone and then listen to it while I bike or walk or exercise or whatever. So it's just a great thing that I can use to sort of fill the gaps where I can't do other things, but I'm still able to listen. I find it's a great thing to do while you're walking or commuting or doing things where you can't use your hands.
And what are you hoping to get out of being involved in Radio Sock, and do you hope to get involved with Flirt FM while you're here?
Yeah, I would like to get sort of an understanding of what it's like to be on the other side of the microphone. Like I said, I spent a lot of time listening to podcasts, but I would sort of like to experience what it's like to kind of create a podcast or a radio show. I'm sort of thinking about a couple of different topics right now. It might be interesting to do a show around AI. It would be interesting to sort of explore the concept of artificial intelligence from a business standpoint, and a technological standpoint, and an economic standpoint. I think it would be kind of cool to maybe interview a couple of professors here and from a bunch of different fields and see what their take on the subject is.
What Felipe said to us earlier was that he's doing a science program and taking advantage of all of the expertise on campus because he's a student of science as well. So perhaps that's something you could combine with your own studies while you're here.
Yeah, it's being on this campus is a great opportunity because there is a lot of expertise here. And so I'm sure it wouldn't be difficult for me to find experts in fields of artificial intelligence and other fields pertaining to artificial intelligence that I could talk to.
A very international representation from Radio Sock at NUI Galway, Felipe, Nolwenn and David. And that brings us to the end of this month's edition of Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3. We'll be back on the first Monday in April with more news from the radio world, including an interview with the founder of Connemara Community Radio, Mary Ruddy. I do hope you'll join us then, but in the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Wireless Flirt. and on facebook.com/wirelessflirt. There's also a blog accompanying the programme, wirelessflirt.wordpress.com. Until the next edition of Wireless, this is John Walsh wishing you good listening.
Wireless on Flirt FM 101.3.